Support for WPR comes from Sister Bay Historical Society with Chris Kindle Market, Door County, a 9-day European Christmas market featuring local artisans and traditional foods, drinks, and music. DoorCountyChristmasMarket.com.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office, although actually we're missing that doctor who makes you wait forever, you know? But that's not you, Zorba, right? You
were, no, not at all.
You'd never make us wait.
No,
you're right
no.
here,
never,
right on time.
Never.
On
never,
the dot,
right.
Ready to go. We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Well, renting versus owning your place. And does that make a difference in your health? Some interesting data that shows that whether or not you own a place or rent a place may affect your biological aging. And then bacteria in daycare, if there's too much bacteria, does that actually encourage your kids to get asthma? So are there some issues with daycare that we have to address in terms of daycare cleanliness? That's really what it's about.
That sounds interesting. And what is the special guest chef recipe?
Kung Pao meatballs. It is a great recipe. I love good food. I love it when it's hot, when it's spicy, when it's good. And this recipe is wonderful, and it's a wonderful guest recipe.
That sounds fantastic. All right, to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go to a caller now in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. My question relates to osteoarthritis. I'm 60, and I've been experiencing osteoarthritis in my large thumb joints for over 5 years now. And I love to fish, and I also collect and play obscure musical instruments, so grip and dexterity are really important to my lifestyle.
Wait a minute. What is an obscure musical instrument?
Well, it is an electric mandolin, electric octave mandolin, or an electric mandola.
Electric mandola.
What's a mandola?
Right. What's
I know the first
like,
two.
You've got the violin, the viola, and the cello. It's kind of in between a mandolin and an octave mandolin.
Oh, so, that sounds really cool.
Oh, this is a guy who couldn't figure out how to play guitar. Life would have been a whole lot simpler if I could have.
Hey, do you have one right there? Can we hear the mandola?
I don't have one right here, but I own over 30 of them. But that's part of the problem. We built another house partly to house all my instruments, so I better get the sand thing figured out.
So wait a minute, you built a house to house the instruments. Now that's what I call instrument sensitive. That the instruments essentially led the way.
It's a long winter up here in Rhinelander.
Yes, it is. I've been up there in the summer, but not in the winter. So
the
summer's
about 2 days long, and I think we're about done with it.
So tell me a bit about your osteoarthritis.
Well, I retired at 56, mm-hmm. and I used to do a lot of keyboard work, and my hands were great when I retired.
Okay, and what'd you do for a living when you retired? 56, young age.
Yeah, well, I worked for a major equipment manufacturer. I was kind of like in marketing and pricing and strategy. So my hands were great when I retired, and I started noticing pain in the large thumb joint where the thumb meets the hand, mostly left hand. Now it's both hands, and that's actually the same kind of thing going on in one foot. Mm-hmm. And x-rays just show that cartilage is, you know, wearing away, age-related.
Right. So you've noticed it at 60 years of age, and when does it bother you the most? Is it all day, at nighttime?
It's really activated with certain activities. I love to fish, and that an activity like where I'm gripping with my hand, or if I try to, let's say, if I took a heavy book off of a shelf, where you have a grip motion.
Grip motion with a spine, a heavy book,
large
book when you're trying to grip, can just be an issue. So what about playing the instrument? Does it affect your playing?
It's starting to.
It's starting to, okay.
I use it as an excuse for bad playing. But you know, that's going to wear out one of these days.
That'll only last for so long.
And there are some who might consider my arthritis a blessing. I don't know. I don't. But it is starting to affect.
It does affect things. What are you taking for it? You taking any over-the-counter ibuprofen or naproxen?
What's actually helped me the most has been the diclofenac tablet, the Voltaren tablet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
My question mm-hmm. kind of relates mm-hmm. to a fork in the road that I'm at, because I've seen a really good hand surgeon in Milwaukee, and I've investigated surgery for this if it gets severe enough. But it's not a minor process.
No, it is not. It is not a minor process, and by no means does it guarantee you're going to be that much better. I mean, so you've got to really be at the extreme before you sort of have that type of surgery. And when I say extreme, well, you've tried everything else to see what you can do. So I've got a couple of suggestions. So first of all, you can now get over-the-counter Voltaren gel.
Yeah.
So it's a gel, and you use it 2 to 3 or even 4 times a day. And the gel can get into the joint, and you're not taking Voltaren in your body with the side effects of a Voltaren pill. And I would take the gel, and I would use that and see what it does. It might be that the Voltaren gel is going to buy you some time. It might buy you a lot of time. That's one thing. The next thing, they're wrist splints, but they're not splints. What they are is they're sort of elastic things that go over the wrist and pull the wrist together. And what they do is they simply produce some proprioception within the wrist that makes it feel better.
Yeah.
And it can be very, very useful.
Yeah, I do have those, and they certainly do help. One thing I've tried, and it was at the suggestion of a podiatrist, because my foot had really flared up, and looking at x-rays, it's the same type of thing in that joint. Was I did a course of prednisone.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you can do that occasionally, but you can't do it too much.
Well, that's my question, because it's been suggested, you know, go on a low dose of prednisone kind of as a maintenance dose.
No, but not do it. Should not
do
it.
Don't do that?
Do not do it. Nope. You run a risk of, later on, you run a risk of osteoporosis and hip fractures. Absolutely not. You do not go on a low dose of prednisone on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Now, you could take Voltaren on a regular basis. You can take, you know, naproxen, over-the-counter naproxen, 2 tablets twice a day on a regular basis. A lot of people do that. You get kidney function tests once a year, and you might tolerate that. That you can take. But low-dose prednisone, absolutely not. Occasionally for a flare, yes, but every time you use it, you run a risk of osteoporosis. So no, you don't want to do that.
Okay.
So once again, I would try the Voltaren gel.
Mm-hmm.
I would take over-the-counter, I would take either Voltaren twice a day, see if that works, or a low-dose ibuprofen, maybe 200 to 400 milligrams twice a day, or 1 Aleve tablet twice a day. I would do that before I would do surgery. To me, surgery on the hand may have a good success rate, and surgeons always have a good success rate. That's what they say.
Yeah.
And many of them do. If they do a lot of them, they do have a good success rate. However, once you go in there and you put something in there, you still may not be the one who had the good success. So I would try everything else before that. I think of surgery as the last step of anything in the hand where you go, gee, I just can't deal with this anymore.
Right.
I'm really over the top. That's when you have the surgery.
Okay. Well, the Voltaren tablets seem to work better than anything. I have tried the gel, but I haven't done it consistently.
Got to do it 3 to 4 times a day. Really works, but it's got to be quite often. So what you do, it's not expensive. I mean, it really is cheap compared to what it is. Put some in your car, your knapsack, and just in the morning put some on, in the evening put some on, and during the day put it on 2 or 3 times so that absorbs into the joint. It's a very good medication that may work. And if you just do it 3 or 4 times a day, and if it works for you, you've got something that isn't internal that may give you some space here. Unfortunately, osteoarthritis tends to be a progressive disease. I wish it weren't, but it is. And so what are you going to do with the instruments?
Hopefully play them.
Carl wants to hear it because
really
Carl's a band guy.
Yeah.
He wants to hear it. That's right. He's going to call you back so we can put you on the show.
Call
at
us
some time.
Back and have one ready and we can hear that. I'd love to hear that.
Well, I have a whole entire room of them, so.
Yeah, well,
can you play them all at the same time?
No.
Oh, man.
That's House on the Rock.
Okay, that's right.
I've been there. That's a sensory overload.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
A trip.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Let us know what happens. Try that Voltaren 3 or 4
times. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for the call. 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before we get back to any voicemails or calls, let's do our first topic. So this is interesting new research here. Renting rather than owning a home is linked to faster aging, biological aging.
Kind of an interesting thing. So you've rented. I mean, sure. Now you own a place.
Right, now
so
I do.
So what were the places like that you rented?
Oh, they were. There was a whole cornucopia of
cornucopia. But some were
apartments.
Some were better than others.
Of course,
right?
Yeah. Some were rough. Some were okay.
Yeah, some were rough. Some were.
Yeah,
but you
it's
had
all
no
part of the deal.
But you had no control over what you had. If something was wrong in the apartment, you might call the landlord, and they might fix it or not fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
You know, so it's a complicated issue.
We had once had bats. We had an apartment. This is in college. We had an apartment that had so many bats flying through the basement.
So many bats?
Yeah.
Just flying in the basement?
Several bats flying all around the basement. My roommate actually had his bedroom down there, and it's where our band actually practiced. And so we called our landlord, I should say our slumlord, and he his first answer to us about that was, oh, well, it's bat season. So he showed up a week later with like a big bag of mothballs and just dumped mothballs all over the basement.
Oh.
And it just stunk up the entire house. Oh. And that was his solution.
That was his solution.
Yeah.
So not only bats, but he may have gotten rid of you.
He almost
mothballs.
He did the next year. Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Exactly.
Anyways, yeah, a lot
it's
of variety.
It's bat season.
It's just bat season.
It's just
no big
bat
deal.
Season.
Deal with it.
That's what I deal with that. But this is an interesting, you know, it's from the BMJ Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. And it looked at renting a private home, particular thing, renting a private home versus actually owning a home and what the effects were. And it appeared that there were physical effects of renting, mental effects, cold, mold, crowding, that are really, when you rent, tend to be more common when you rent than when you actually own. And what they did was they looked at basically epigenetic information. It's basically how your genes actually express yourself. And according to the particular longitudinal study, it looked like you were twice as likely to have some biological aging based on their DNA analysis if you were renting. But once you actually owned a home, it appeared that things got better.
Hmm.
But the study is an interesting study. It really doesn't show that renting, you're going to get older quicker when you rent. But I think it shows that the environment that you live in can make a difference. So here it is. You gave an example of you're not going to live in that house forever. It's in college. But you may not be able to afford a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're in a place that has mold,
mm-hmm.
and you can't do anything about it. Or you're by a busy street. You know, you're renting by a busy street, and there's fumes from there from diesel trucks. And we know, for instance, that the fumes from diesel trucks can make a big difference, especially with children growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this, once again, says your environment and where you live really matters. Now, you live in a house.
Right.
You got a couple kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you do things around the house to make it look nicer?
Yeah, we're actually right now having adding a sunroom, having an addition.
An addition.
A renovation.
Why?
Yeah. More space. We're running out of room. Our kids are getting bigger. Uh-huh. Our house isn't huge.
Uh-huh.
So we're
uh-huh.
just...
So you have more space. So why do you want more space?
Just to stretch out more. And...
Stretch out more. No, but that's part of your living.
It is.
You want more space because you feel you're going to feel better. It may be less stressful. The kids, the kids are getting bigger and you need more space and you want to do things. So that environment then begins to affect your environment, how you interact with your children, how you interact with your wife, it really all fits together, and we tend to ignore those things.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the main steps you may want to do is beautify your house. So in your case, you're adding a sunroom. But even if you make something, if you're renting or owning, bringing a plant into a house can make it look better. Taking and painting a room may make you feel better. Taking and cleaning a room that may be really dusty and dirty, or shampooing the rugs. All these things affect health, and we tend to ignore them and think about health as just being sort of the Mediterranean diet and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And it really isn't. It's also our environment. And that's what this study shows. So renters have more issues than people who own houses, and that may then affect ultimately their biological aging. And that's where the interesting part of this research kind of fits.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave us a voicemail. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee.
My question is just about the prostate surgeries, non-cancerous, just reduce the size. And I'm seems like there's a couple of different options. I'm just curious as to what one he would recommend. Thank you.
There are many different options. There's green laser surgery. There's getting rid of the prostate completely, called the TURP, transurethral prostate, you know, surgery. You just remove the whole thing. There probably are four or five different things that you can do. And the real question is, what works for that surgeon? That's what you do. So you have a question about it, you read about it, and you go, well, I think this is better than this one. Then what you do is you go to two different surgeons, and you say, well, you're using green laser. What's the result of that? And then you can make a decision that way. So there's no one that's actually better than the other, because they all have effects and they all have side effects and they all have problems. The other question is, have you actually given it a good go with medication? Because men get prostate surgery because they get up and go to the washroom too much at night, or they're having problems during the daytime. And you want to make sure that you've tried medications such as Flomax and then another drug called Proscar. Proscar, which shrinks the prostate a bit and used in combination with Flomax, another pill. Sometimes that can be quite effective for people. So medically, you want to see if that works first. And if that doesn't work, then you go to the prostate surgery.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. 7413. All right, before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite do-gooders and backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. And actually, Zorba, this one comes from a division of the Grammar Police we've yet to hear from. I know there's a lot of divisions.
There are a lot of divisions.
We've heard from so many divisions.
We do not know all of the divisions.
There's a new one.
There are an infinite number of divisions in the Grammar
Police. A new division has surfaced.
Yes, it surfaced.
This is the Chemical Police.
Oh, the Chemical Police.
Right? That's new, right? I don't think I've heard of them.
Never, never. Okay. In all these years, they've been silent. Silent.
They pick their poison, right?
You bet. They pick their poison.
Let's hear a voicemail. This is from a listener in Wisconsin.
Oh no, it's the Chemical Police. Hey, Zorba, I've heard you mention a few times about whether to use a zinc or a chemical sunblock. Well, zinc is a chemical. Anything solid, liquid, or gaseous is a chemical. And Carl, when you mentioned the thing about in Caddyshack, Bill Murray's character eating the Baby Ruth bar from the pool, what I recall is people supposedly thought it was Zorba's favorite subject, poop. They thought it was excrement, so they didn't want to stay in the pool. That's why Bill Murray's character figured, hey, it's a candy bar, eat it. And also, as far as just to let all of you know, you're doing good work and you're doing it well.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was, you know, it speaks
for itself. He covered a lot in that voicemail.
He covered a lot. Well, the Chemical Police are really good. It's
yeah,
like 1, 2,
they're
3.
Thorough, right?
They're thorough. They're chemists. They're thorough. You know. So the real thing with sunblocker was the fact that zinc is reflecting things. That was sort of the idea behind it, that there are little particles of zinc, so they actually reflect it, whereas the other chemical blockers do something completely different. So they're two different things. But yes, I stay corrected. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm
Thank
corrected too much. On the, I guess, the Caddyshack right. Bill Murray
that's
thing.
That's it, yeah.
Yes. So yeah, well, he ate the Baby Ruth.
That's right.
And,
that's
yeah.
Right. I like a bit. Do you like Baby Ruth?
You know, I think maybe every Halloween I try a Baby Ruth
and
again.
And then you go, that's about
like,
it.
There
no,
you go.
I never
Just
buy.
A little mini one is
so
okay.
So what candy bar do you buy when you want to buy a candy bar? I mean, I do buy candy bars.
I'm a sucker for just a Reese's peanut butter cup.
See?
Or a Reese's, Reese's Pieces.
See? Yeah, that's it. see? Now, I am more Hershey's. I like a Hershey's.
Just a straight Hershey's guy.
Hershey's with almonds. That's what Hershey's.
Okay.
Or a Kit Kat.
Kit Kats are great.
How about Brad? What do you like? Let's see what Brad likes.
Oh, I really like Twix.
Oh, there we go. I was hoping you'd call out Twix. Twix is great.
They are good.
Speaking of candies, actually, I'm glad you brought this up. Do you remember a couple shows ago we were talking about Twinkies and how they would, you know, survive a nuclear war?
Wait a minute.
So I tried to go to the grocery store this morning and get some Twinkies. They didn't even have any Twinkies, but they have these other Little Debbies. These are called, you see this? Can you read that, Zorba?
Strawberry shortcake rolls with Little Debbie.
It's close to a Twinkie, right? It's like a Twinkie
like
with strawberry crap in there.
Have you had one?
I've not had one, but remember the whole thing we were going to do?
I do.
We were going to do an experiment.
With one of these.
We were going to leave one in the studio and see
forever.
How long it
That's
lasts.
That's how long it actually lasts. That's right, 20 years from now.
Now,
it
the
looks
question,
exactly the same.
Yeah, the question here is, it's in this little wrapper. Do we open the wrapper?
You mean do we eat it Do we eat the cellophane along with the, the Little Debbie?
No.
I don't think it'll taste
No, for our experiment, when we leave it out in the studio, should it be in the wrapper or should it be like exposed to the elements?
Oh, exposed to the elements.
So we're
going to
open this thing and leave it open in here and see what happens.
And see what happens.
Okay, I'm opening the wrapper.
Well, yeah, that's it. We'll see what happens. Yeah,
that's really good radio. Yeah, that's right. It's good we have sensitive microphones for this.
That's right,
Steve. It's instantly, I got a huge hit of this cream smell.
Oh, really?
It's just like,
I mean, just that's right.
Sugar bomb.
It's a sugar.
It smells pretty good.
Smells pretty.
Yeah, so we'll
pretty
just
good.
Leave it right there.
No, that's how they manufacture it.
We'll leave it right
and
there.
And we'll come back. We're going to put a picture on our website.
Good idea.
Of how that's there and do that. That's
What's
it.
Your guess? Here's the ingredients
oh, my
on the
goodness.
Back. What, how many are
Million,
we looking at? What's
50,
your guess?
50.
It's 47.
Oh, you
that's
checked
a really
it?
Good guess. I
50.
Counted the ingredients
that's
in this
right.
thing.
50 ingredients to make this
to
thing.
To make that little
Only
roll.
47. I was off by three. To make it and look at it. That's right. Little Debbie. Well, Little Debbie was good. She mm-hmm. was an engineer.
Was she?
Yeah,
maybe she
right.
was a chemist.
Maybe she was a chemist.
Little Debbie the chemist. All right. You want to join the grammar police? Post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, more of your calls to come, more listener voicemails, and we'll have a special guest chef on the phone helping us cook up Kung Pao meatballs. Mm, that sounds pretty good. Mm. All that coming up on Zorba
Pastor on Your Health.
Carl Christensen in the studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave us a voicemail if you'd like. But Zorba, it's recipe time again.
Da-da-da-da.
And this week we're in for quite a treat. Today we have a special guest chef joining in on the fun. Jing Gao is the author of the new cookbook, The Book of Sichuan Chili Crisp, Spicy Recipes and Stories from Fly By Jing's Kitchen. She's a chef and entrepreneur, a renowned expert on Chinese cuisine, who's been featured in the pages of Forbes, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, many, many others. Jing joins us today to share her delicious recipe for Kung Pao meatballs. Jing, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. So I've been to Chengdu. That's where you originally were?
Mm-hmm.
From?
Yeah. That's where I'm from. I was born there.
Yeah, yeah, my daughter-in-law lives outside of, or lived outside of there, and I think Yibin, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's like two.
Oh, yeah.
Yibin.
Yes, so, they're famous for this pickled vegetable called Yibin Yatai, which is actually like an essential ingredient in dandan noodles and many other dishes.
Yeah, so I've been there. I've been to China like two or three times, which is good. But I look,
amazing.
You lived in Germany and England and Austria because your dad was a nuclear physics professor. That's kind of an interesting, it must have been an interesting life, and you could go to different places. And then, of course, you ended up in the U.S., but quite nice. And then you went to business school in Canada.
Yeah, so it was kind of an interesting childhood all over the world. I was born in Chengdu, and when I was about five, we moved to Germany and then, you know, different countries after that. We eventually settled in Canada, where I went to school, high school and college, and then graduated and started working in the corporate world. It was actually a tech job that brought me to Asia, brought me to China, and that's where I started to, you know, reconnect with my roots, peel back some of the layers.
Right.
And for me, food became that key vehicle to do so, and to get closer to my family back home. And you know, it really ignited my love for flavor, and especially for Sichuan flavor, the flavors of my hometown.
So Kung Pao meatballs. So meatballs in Wisconsin would not be Kung Pao meatballs. What would they be, Carl?
They'd be meat-flavored meatballs.
They'd be meat-flavored meatballs. But meatballs are sort of comfort food.
Sure.
You know, they're served all over, and you have some meatballs. They're very common kind of a food whenever you have an event, you know, soccer event, high school event, or anything. We have meatballs, but they won't taste like this. This is a great variation.
It'll taste better.
Much better. That is much better. So let's go through this recipe. So we start out with a pound of ground pork, easy to get, half a cup of grated onion, a cup of torn soft white bread, so any bread that you might have around the house, you know, that might work out with you, an egg, two garlic cloves, a quarter cup of grated Parmesan cheese. Interesting, I don't think of Kung Pao and Parmesan.
So this is very much, you know, the meatballs themselves are very inspired by the Italian homestyle way of making meatballs, right? So, and I personally, I love cheese, and I love like a nice and fluffy meatball.
Quarter cup of flat leaf parsley, three quarters of a cup kosher salt.
Teaspoon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That'd be a lot of salt.
Three quarters
all right.
of a
That's
teaspoon.
What I'm here for.
That's right. You're here to correct it. Three tablespoonfuls of oil. Now, three quarters of a cup of Kung Pao sauce. And I looked in the cookbook, the Kung Pao sauce that you have there. So you make your own Kung Pao sauce, right?
Yes. So a lot of this book, you know, it's called The Book of Sichuan Chili Crisps, but it's not just about chili crisps, right? There's all kinds of other condiments that become shortcuts to these amazing flavors of Sichuan. So if you have, you know, the Sichuan pantry and, you know, make some of these sauces in advance, then these dishes come together really easily.
So the Kung Pao sauce uses, I'm just going to go through it quickly, we'll put it on there, two tablespoonfuls of sugar, two tablespoonfuls of chicken stock or water. How do you pronounce it?
Shaoxing wine.
Shaoxing wine.
It's a cooking wine from the Shaoxing region of China, which is in eastern China.
So where you can get that at a typical Asian
you
grocery store?
You can get
store?
That at any Asian store,
So it's probably been there for years and never realized that. Two teaspoons, you know, two teaspoons of light soy sauce, a teaspoon of dark soy sauce. I know the difference. Add two tablespoonfuls of black vinegar.
So Chinese black vinegar is really special. It's made from, like, grains and rice, and it's a perfect complement to Chinese flavors. You know, a little bit closer to a balsamic, but not as sweet.
Perfect. So to make it, I'm going to go through this. To make the meatballs in a large bowl, add the pork, onion, bread, egg, garlic, cheese, parsley, salt, and pepper. Using your hands, mix it to combine it. Make sure it's a nice, even distribution. Form the meatballs. Fill a small bowl with water. You use to wet your hands as you form the meatballs. That's a great idea. Put your hands in the water because that'll make it much easier. Using your hands, make a golf ball-sized mixture. I've never done that, and my hands are always sticky when I make meatballs, so I'm going to use this on there. And then a large cast iron skillet over medium heat. Two tablespoonfuls of oil sizzling. Add the meatballs. Cook while turning until brown, but not fully cooked, about 5 minutes. Transfer to a plate. Then in the same large skillet over medium heat, heat the remaining one tablespoonful of neutral oil. So that would be like a canola oil or something? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Then add the meatballs with the Kung Pao sauce. Turn down the heat to low. Simmer for 10 minutes, tossing them occasionally so they're evenly coated. Remove the skillet from the heat. I'm getting hungry. Place it in a serving vessel and garnish with sesame seeds or scallions and store it in an airtight container for up to a week. This looks great. It's got a great picture on there. So it's a wonderful recipe. This is a great cookbook. You do a fabulous job. You really have outdone yourself.
You.
How long have you been doing this?
So I was, when I lived in China about 5 years ago, I had a restaurant. And I also started Fly By Jing originally as an underground supper club. So I was doing dinner parties, you know, in cities all over the world, actually. And so for a couple of years, I was really just traveling and doing events and pop-ups and sharing these flavors that I loved with others. And through that process, I realized that these flavors were really universal, but people just had no access to them outside of China because the ingredients are so rare and so hard to find outside of China. So I wanted to create a way for people to be to more easily access the flavors in an easier format. So I started to bottle some of the sauces that I was already making for a lot of my dinners, and I started selling them. And about 5 years ago, moved to the U.S. and started an online website where, you know, flybedding.com, where we sold our line of sauces, including our hero product, the Citron Chili Crisp, and, you know, have grown it since then. We were one of the first modern Asian food companies to launch in the U.S. just a few years ago, and now really just excited to see the whole landscape of flavor change in this country. And we're now available in over 5,000 stores all over the U.S.
How neat is that? It's a good example of a startup with an idea, something really good that takes over. And Americans love different tastes, and that's wonderful. And this, as I say, looks really, really good. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing this, and thanks for bringing more flavor into the United States of America.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You take care, and thanks again. Great recipe, great book. The book is the book of Szechuan Chili Crisp, and we're going to have this recipe on our website, and I know we're going to get lots of people who are going
to
download it.
We will. So. We'll put the link on the website to the book, picture the Kung Pao meatballs and everything. Jing, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
To get a copy of today's recipe, or you can find out more about Jing Gao's cookbook, The Book of Szechuan Chili Crisp, you can visit us on our website at
Zorba@WPR.org.
That sounds great. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's hear a voicemail now. This is a listener in Wisconsin.
Hi, doctors, pastor. I'd like to donate blood, but I've heard from everybody that because I'm gay, they want nothing to do with me. I've looked at their requirements online, and I have been told that they do not want gay donors, which is absurd, but it's the truth. What do you think?
Well, it's totally absurd. It is the truth, and it had to do with men who have sex with men and HIV at the beginning of the crisis. And the Red Cross is now in the process of actually changing what they're doing because finally they, you know, realize, hey, we can check to see if somebody has, if somebody is HIV positive. And the fact is that's where it came from. So the answer is it is dumb. They should change it, and they are finally in the process of changing it because there are a lot of gay men who want to actually donate blood, and this has been in place for, I don't know, two decades? Two decades too long. Once you can test, and blood is always tested for HIV, and the test is accurate, why let people out of the system when they can actually get blood? So you're right. Silly. Dumb, and I hope they change it. And they're in the process. That's what I've read.
That's good. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, time for the segment where an honest-to-Pete doctor unsheathes his medical machete, clear-cuts his way through the clickbait, and takes on the mighty, mighty internet. We call this segment Google Doc. All right, Zorba, let's do another voicemail, actually. This is a voicemail from a listener in Terre Haute, Indiana. Wait, hang on. Don't play it yet. Do you know any famous people from Terre Haute, Indiana?
No. Godzilla?
That's a good guess. Close. Kurt Rambis. He was a L.A. Laker.
Kurt Rambis.
He kind of looks like Godzilla.
But I don't know who
glasses.
Kurt Rambis is.
He was
not-so-great
NBA player from the 80s and
from
90s.
Terre Haute?
Turned into a coach.
Is it Terre Haute or Terre Haute?
I thought it was a silent T. I thought it was Terre Haute. No?
Yeah, you know something?
Please tell us.
Please tell us. That's right. We want to pronounce it the right way, and we are not. So go ahead.
All right. Let's hear Terre Haute, Indiana.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Carl. I wanted to say hi. I've been listening to your show since I lived in Madison. I moved from Madison unwillingly years and years ago, and that's where I started listening to you and Tom, Dr. Zorba, and I greatly appreciate your show. Luckily, now I can listen to you online. So I'm calling because now I'm 55 instead of 35, and I have some Achilles tendon recurring issues, and I had gotten the one fixed on the right-hand side, and then I was trying the treadmill again, which I love to run, and the other one, you know, now is sore. So I just want to know, is there anything I can do? I don't take anything. I'm not a big vitamin person, but I keep getting these ads on Facebook for collagen supplements, and it says that that's good for joints, which I know isn't a tendon. But is there any evidence, Dr. Zorba, that you can take supplements for tendon health or joint health or any of those things? I'm fit, you know, slim. I bike, swim, you know, love to run. I'm trying to get back into that. So thanks very much. I will listen for your show. And Carl, I'm glad to, I've heard you many times. So it's nice to see that you'll be taking Tom's place, but we all will miss Tom too. All right. Thank you. Bye.
The answer is save your money. There really is no evidence. Save your money. You can eat all the collagen you want to. In fact, the cheapest way to get collagen is go to the butcher and get some bones, make wonderful soup, and then chew on the bones where they have collagen.
Wow.
I mean, that's one of the things. We happen to do that. My mother had bones. We ate bones and ate the meat off of bones.
Did you eat bone broth as well? That's kind of popular,
well, it was
right?
in the soup.
Okay, sure.
It was bone broth, yeah. And we ate it. I have no idea. I still don't know why she did it. She had bones and we had vegetables in there and
use it all. Just, the whole hog approach.
Well, no, it wasn't hog, it was beef.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was beef.
It's an important distinction, right?
It was not hog bones. You could do with hog bones too. Yeah, why not the whole cow approach? But there's no evidence that collagen that you take orally is going to affect you. But if you have Achilles tendon problems, the real issue is to stretch them correctly, go to a physical therapist or a trainer on how you should do it. Whether or not you should actually wear a splint when you're engaging in sports is the issue. And it may be at a certain age that you don't engage in those sports. There is a reason why 55-year-old men and women do not play soccer.
Mm.
Now, they may occasionally play soccer because in soccer, you're planting and moving and falling. Now, at 15, when you fall and plant and move, you get up.
Mm-hmm.
But at 55, when you fall and plant and move, you stay down.
You plant.
That's right. You plant. Right. So you got to play to your sport the right way. But no, collagen orally doesn't do anything.
All right, there's much more of the show to come. We'll have more of your calls. We'll tackle another interesting health topic and more of your voicemails as well. So stick around. Keep that radio dialed in right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in the studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor, and this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before we get back to those phone calls, Zorba, our next topic, we got bacteria at daycare might raise kids' odds for asthma.
Right. So your kids, how old are your kids now?
They are 5 and 8.
So they were in daycare,
Both were in daycare.
Did they get lots of infections when they were in daycare? Did you ever notice
anything? I feel
like
at first they did, and then maybe they built up immune system.
Yeah,
there.
You do build up
immunity. We did too, as parents, I know that.
No, as parents you get, as parents you do that. And in fact, I remember when I first was in medical school and when I was first doing my residency, if I was on pediatrics, I knew I was going to get sicker.
Because
the kids are cesspools of disease.
Petri dishes.
That's a Petri dishes, that's exactly it. But it may be the bacteria actually in daycare settings itself may be an issue. And this is an article, very interesting article, came out of France and looked at asthma. So they looked at about 500 kids, daycare facilities, and they looked at respiratory symptoms such as wheezing. And they looked at the bacteria in four basic bacteria within it. They vacuumed up bacteria and daycare. So did you do a home daycare or?
They were both daycare facilities, different places.
Yeah. And how did it look on the inside?
One was definitely better than the other one.
And what was better about it?
It was cleaner, for sure.
It was cleaner.
It was larger.
It was cleaner.
It was newer.
It
seemed like the daycare providers were happier overall.
Well,
it was a different experience, for sure.
That's an important point, you know, certainly with the daycare providers. But it may have also been cleaner. And so the question is, with the bacteria Streptococcus and Lactococcus, which were dominant in a couple of daycare centers where it appeared that children were wheezing more. And so the question was, is the daycare facility causing the wheezing? So it's kind of an interesting question, because it may be that the children who are in the daycare center make these bacteria more common, and it may not be the daycare center itself that's causing the wheezing, but they are associated with children who have these bacterial infections.
Interesting. Chicken or the egg?
Well, we don't know.
Right.
That's what it is. So, and, you know, sometimes, especially in our society, we become so worried about bacteria that we try to make everything as clean as we can.
Right.
When, in fact, there can be too much. But I think if you have kids in daycare, you'd want to look at, for instance, how the daycare people are. But I think you want to look at the facility itself and look in the corners and see how clean it is. Because that may affect your children's health, you know. And your goal when you bring your kids to daycare is to have them have a good time, but also to make sure that they're safe. And this particular study shows the cleanliness of the daycare may make a difference, because their risk of asthma may increase in an environment that is not as clean.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to those phones now. This is a caller in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How can we help today?
Well, I had a question for Dr. Zorba. I am a longtime listener, and this is first-time caller, so I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. I'm a longtime listener, and I'm a zero-time caller, and I'm not nervous.
I'm nervous.
Sounds good. Well, I have an unusual thing, I think, because I've been to the emergency room a couple times in the last 2 years. For the same problem that they can't seem to figure out. I'm pretty sure it's a diverticular bleed in my intestines.
Huh. Why do you think that?
Well, 2 years ago, I was in the emergency room, and I was having a lot of bleeding out of my rectum. I mean, a lot. So that kind of got me nervous, and so I went to the emergency room here in Spokane, and they didn't know what to do with me, quite frankly. They ended up admitting me to watch me overnight, and then they did an emergency colonoscopy to try and determine what was going on.
Sure, okay.
They did find this diverticular, whatever you call it.
Diverticulum, a little pocket in the colon, okay.
Right, and it was bleeding from there. And so they still didn't know what to do with it. And so they said, well, you know, it'll usually stop on its own. I said, okay. And so they sent me home when it was still bleeding.
Okay. I'm listening. So they sent you home and you were still having blood coming out.
Right.
And then what happened after that?
Well, this was a couple years ago that it happened, but it happened again recently here in the last month.
Oh.
And they sent me home. I also have hemorrhoids.
Okay.
And so they were blaming it on that, but it's not that. I know it's not that. So I went in recently, and they sent me home fairly quickly. And it kept bleeding for almost 3 weeks before it finally stopped.
That's a lot, bleeding for three weeks. So I'll tell you, this is one of the problems and issues with rectal bleeding. So if you've got hemorrhoids, you know, they bleed. And so you wonder if you've got bright red blood, is it from the hemorrhoids? Or if you have a colonoscopy, you want to make sure there's not a cancer there. That's the big issue with bleeding. But they found a diverticulum, you know, that was bleeding from there. And sometimes it's not easy to differentiate what's going on, you know, which one it is. But bleeding, of course, is, you know, a horrible thing. So did you go back to the gastroenterologist who did the colonoscopy?
Well, that colonoscopy was done in the hospital with one of the hospital doctors.
Mm-hmm.
They did suggest that if it didn't stop, that I should go and have a typical colonoscopy. And I didn't go because it stopped finally after about 3 weeks.
I think you ought to see a gastroenterologist. I'll tell you why. So if you were my patient and you say, well, I don't know where the GI bleeding has come, I'd say, let's do a full colonoscopy. Let's see if we see something on there that'll help give the answer. Once again, it's not 100%, but if you're bleeding from the hemorrhoids, you know, if it's a diverticulum that bleeds, they generally don't do anything, but sometimes there are a lot of other things that it could be in your gut that's causing bleeding. There's something called an AV malformation, and that that's where the arteries and veins come together, and they make kind of like a red mark. It actually looks like a red mark on your colon, and they tend to bleed. And so you might have that. You got to get a GI evaluation if you've got this blood and you don't know. I think going to the ER is not the right answer for this. Going to the gastroenterologist is the right answer. You need a workup. 3 weeks is a long time.
Is there anything that you can do to fix?
Well, first of all, if it's hemorrhoids, what you do is you get a sitz bath. So a sitz bath is a thing you fit on the john, you put hot water in it, and you sit there, and it tends to shrink the hemorrhoids. Warm water, do it a couple times a day. Nobody can get in a bathtub two or three times a day. But you can, well, people can, but it's hard to do. But a sitz bath fits on the john, right on the commode, with hot water, and that will often shrink hemorrhoids. So that'll give you an idea. You know, if you're still doing that and it's bleeding and it's 3 weeks later, my brain would say, I don't think this is from hemorrhoids. And once again, even if it's from hemorrhoids, you could still have something else going on. 3 weeks is a long time to have bleeding hemorrhoids, a long time, especially if you've not been bothered by hemorrhoids in the past.
Right.
You need a full workup. Good example of a time when you do need to see a gastroenterologist versus getting care at an urgent care or ER type center.
Good. I appreciate your input and your recommendation.
You're welcome. And thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
You too.
Take care. Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a voicemail from a listener in Kansas.
I have a question about nasal sprays. Is it better to use a non-steroid nasal spray rather than one that it has steroid in it? Thank you.
Well, steroid nasal sprays are great for anybody who has allergies. They work really well. But there's an over-the-counter antihistamine nasal spray. I'm blocking on the name right now, but you can just Google it and look it up. It used to be by prescription only. And if that works, you can use that one. They're both. The steroid nasal spray is very safe, very effective. See what works for you. That generally is a more effective than the antihistamine nasal spray. What you want to avoid are things such as Afrin being the name brand, because those sprays you can use for 2 or 3 days at most. And if not, your nose becomes addicted to it. And when you don't use it, it sort of clogs up. So that spray you don't want to use every day for sure.
800-462-7413. Leave a voicemail. Call anytime. Leave us a voicemail. And let's do another voicemail, huh? Why not? This is a caller from Mauston, Wisconsin.
Tell me, what is the difference between an MRI and a CAT scan? I'd like to know, what are the doctors looking for that they use one or the other? Thank you.
I've had the same question, actually.
Such a good question.
Yeah.
So CAT scans are x-rays. MRIs don't use an x-ray at all.
Okay.
Magnetic resonance, it's a different way of imaging. And ultrasound is another way of imaging. They're really three different ways. And they all can pick up things differently. So CAT scans, when they first came out, very expensive, very slow. When I first started practice in Madison, there was a CAT scan at the University of Wisconsin. There was a CAT scan at St. Mary's, and there were three CAT scans in town.
Just three of them.
And what would now take 3 minutes to do a CAT scan took 30 minutes. They were very slow, and this had to do with computerization. They've improved dramatically. But they can pick up different things. So an MRI scan can pick up things, the CAT scan, and vice versa. So, for instance, when you're looking at gallstones, we do an ultrasound of the gallbladder because that's the cheapest imaging to see if you have gallstones. And it tends to pick them up well. I can't tell you the exact number. But CAT scans are good, but they don't necessarily pick up more than the ultrasound. And then MRIs are another way of doing it. So we use these different scanning modalities. But basically, CAT scan, x-ray, MRI is magnetic resonance imaging. Ultrasound uses sound. Different ways of doing things that dramatically have changed medicine. And I'm going to give you a perfect example of this. When I first did medicine, we had patients who had painless jaundice. So painless jaundice is scary. Mm. Jaundice with pain often means your gallbladder has trouble, but painless jaundice often means you may have pancreatic cancer. And when I first started practice, we didn't have the scanning techniques to do it, and we often did exploratory surgery. We opened the person up, And then we said, oh, my God, they've got cancer all over. Closed them up and didn't do anything. Maybe have sent them for chemo. But all of a sudden, they did surgery that we didn't need to have. Now, all three scans have changed the way we do medicine today. It's far better. And these scans have made a tremendous difference in diagnosis and treatment.
Interesting stuff. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, it's time to log in to the Zorba Pastor On Your Health Facebook page for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
And actually, Zorba, this message could be interpreted as an infraction handed out from the pronunciation police.
I've heard of them before.
Yeah, we hear from them quite a bit.
I have heard of them before. They're a bit picky.
A listener named Joan writes, listening to your recipes during your show is enjoyable for me.
Wonderful.
As I enjoy healthy cooking.
Excellent.
It's always a great start, right?
Always a
good start. Out with the compliment.
But.
It's actually a however this time.
However.
However, I shudder at your use of teaspoonfuls.
Oh, God.
Teaspoonfuls, tablespoonfuls, and cupfuls, etc. Please note, when measuring, you're filling spoons, cups, quarts, and such, which is their proper plural form. Therefore, the correct usage is teaspoons full, tablespoons full, or cups
full. Teaspoons full.
Yes.
Tablespoons full.
Don't do fulls. No more fulls. No.
Teaspoons. Teaspoonfuls?
Teaspoons full.
Teaspoons full.
Cups full.
Cups full.
This is tough. Please, Joan goes on, please don't pluralize the word full, as fulls is not a word and is causing my shudders. At least we know what's causing your shudders. Thank you and keep up the fun. Thanks, Joan.
We thought of a seizure. That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Spool.
That was a pretty kind email, actually. I thought it was going to be worse
than
that.
That's right, yeah.
That's okay.
You never know, though.
You never know. What do you think?
Know.
That's a good point, right?
I think it's a good point.
Do you think it'll stick? Probably not,
not
right?
Not at all.
Not even close.
In my brain, will
30
it stick?
Some years?
I don't
no,
think so.
No way. No. Do you think Zorba is fulls of something? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
WPRs.org.
That's not even right. It's Zorba at WPR.org. There you go. Want to do this again next week, Zorba?
I hope so.
Okay, let's do it. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us
anytime.
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 Anytime. How long are we going to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Very good. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.
From PRX.